Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and it's time for week two in our four-part Digital Life series with Peter Rojas, founder of GDGT and Gizmodo. Today's topic is access to the internet, to the high-speed internet, and all the things that a constant Wi-Fi connection can bring you. One change, using apps like Foursquare to constantly know where people are physically would probably benefit from constant Wi-Fi access. Do we want that? Cities like Philadelphia have put up free, if not very reliable, Wi-Fi networks, and there are rumbles from everyone from Google to the FCC might both be looking at their own methods of providing access. So what's at stake when we talk about free or reduced cost internet access? And what is it with these services that track where you are physically when you're online, which used to be that, you know, you could be on the moon and nobody knew who you were or where you were? Peter Rojas, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me back.
So the FCC is talking about setting aside free spectrum for internet use. What does that mean technically, and what would that mean for access to the internet?
Well, it's a proposal. They're looking at ways to expand broadband access to more people, because there are other countries like South Korea that actually broadband access is basically universal. And so it's still, while most households in the U.S. have it, not everyone does. And so the idea is that they set aside parts of the wireless spectrum and mandate to whoever gets that spectrum that they have to offer low-cost or very cheap wireless broadband internet access.
So what would it look like? Just an open network that anyone could connect to who has a wireless card in their computer from almost anywhere? Or
It could take a variety of different forms. I mean, it could take something like the municipal Wi-Fi networks like we're seeing in Philadelphia and other cities. Those have not been remarkably successful, and one reason is that it's very difficult to blanket an entire metropolitan area with Wi-Fi. The range of one Wi-Fi base station is actually pretty limited. It's usually at best a few hundred yards, though there are some things you can do to maximize that range.
And listeners, we do want to open up the phones. We want to hear, for one thing, from anybody who feels boxed out now from access to the web, because I know some of you for whom this seems old hat are thinking, oh, gosh, access to the web, Wi-Fi as something that's, you know, new. Wi-Fi is old. Why are we having a 1997 discussion? But there are a lot of folks who do feel boxed out from access to the web even still. If you are one of them, not, you know, a Luddite who just doesn't choose to use this technology because you don't want to, that's your choice. But people who feel boxed out in any way from internet access, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, and would free or low-cost broadband change the way you use the web or that other people in your community might use the web? Give us a call, 212-433-9692. Probably no point for you in saying, or go to our website, WNYC.org, and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Did I interrupt you in the middle of a thought there?
Well, I was just saying that for some of the new wireless technologies that are coming out, like WiMAX, you could actually be able to cover a wider area. It would require a new kind of wireless card or new technology, but it would be kind of more like the connection that you have in your cell phone, more ubiquitous. You'd be able to access in more places.
And the FCC has brought up the idea of free or low-cost broadband networks before, but it didn't work out, I think mainly because phone companies were against it and people were concerned that the internet was not family-friendly enough for open access. And there aren't many details of this new FCC rumor, but are there are ways to get around those old problems?
Well, for starters, the wireless carriers, they don't like the idea of being either forced to compete against a government or a municipality in offering access to the internet. And they also don't like the idea of being sort of mandated by what price they can charge, and they don't want to be regulated in this. They don't like regulation in general, right? But they don't want to be sort of they don't want to become the electric company. They don't want to become the water company. They really see themselves as being offering a premium experience and that they've made these billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars of investment in their infrastructure. And so they should be able to charge whatever the market can bear.
Let's take a call from Terry in Manhattan. Terry, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I live in Vermont most of the time. I'm in Manhattan now, and it is almost impossible to get broadband in most areas of Vermont. It's a real problem, and the state keeps saying they're going to do something about it. But the only reason I have it, and I need it for work, I could not work and I could not live where I am without it, is that some small-time entrepreneurs on the mountain where I have a line of sight across from me have set up a microwave broadband company that services, you know, maybe a couple hundred people. And if they hadn't done that, or if I didn't have line of sight, I would have no options for broadband except satellite, which is both lousy and really expensive.
Interesting.
So it's a real problem for a lot of people living in rural areas.
Yeah, so the rural question,
yeah, absolutely.
Peter, is one in particular.
And I think one of the problems is that, you know, the United States is a very big country, and it's not like Europe or South Korea or Japan, which is very dense, and it's easier to cover people and build out a broadband network. And it's expensive. I mean, Verizon is trying to build out a fiber optic network here in Manhattan, and the cost just to wire up one household are in the thousands of dollars. So you can imagine how much more expensive that would be to wire up people, you know, living a few hundred miles outside of where the nearest you know, station is.
So that's still an unsolved problem.
Yeah.
Terry, thank you. Maria in Bensonhurst, you're on WNYC. Hi, Maria.
Hi. Like I said, my name is Maria, and I'm from Bensonhurst. And my only two options are dial-up or Cablevision, which will give me a discount of like $30 a month for the first month, but then it goes up to $50 a month. So I think it's great that the possibility of having Wi-Fi in my neighborhood.
So it's an economic barrier for you.
Oh, definitely.
And a lot of people you know?
Well, for myself, because currently I'm unemployed, and it would really help. And like I said, the only option in this area is Cablevision. I know other people that only pay $20 a month and have DSL service in their areas, so it's an economic issue.
Maria, thank you. Do we need to define some terms here? Now, of course, she's using dial-up,
yeah,
which actually is through her telephone line, mm-hmm, so much slower than what we're calling broadband. And DSL is kind of in the middle.
So DSL is a form of broadband, and it tends – most people in the U.S., when they have broadband, they either have it via their cable company using a cable modem, or they have DSL, which is actually – goes over the phone, your copper wire phone connection, but uses a special kind of equipment to get a much higher speed. And cable generally is faster, but not always, and it really depends on where you're at. I think, like the caller is saying, the problem is that there isn't a lot of competition, that most people only have one option, maybe two, for their broadband provider, and so it doesn't give – you know, either the provider's much incentive to lower their prices.
So is this almost like the healthcare debate? A, is internet access a right? And B, do we want a public option to compete with the private options?
It is a little bit like that. And there are some people that argue that access to the internet is a human right, or is becoming a human right, because it's really about access to information and about a well-informed populace being necessary for democracy.
Diane in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Diane.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to point out a parallel between our own tough economic times and the TVA work during the Great Depression. At that time, we had many people who were off the grid, bad economic times. People saw that being on the grid was going to be important for job creation during a tough economic time, and job creation and growth in our society down the road. And I see a very strong parallel between universal and affordable access to broadband and being on the grid during the Great Depression and getting people on the grid. I think there's a very important parallel there, and the investment should be made for many reasons, to put people to work now and to put people to work in decades to come.
Diane, thank you. And Peter Rojas, say we get to the point where we have basically ubiquitous Wi-Fi coverage. Whose business model does that threaten the most? Can you see a future, for example, where everyone is using the latest iPad to Skype calls instead of owning a cell phone?
Well, it's certainly possible, and I think that eventually that we'll see a world like that where you don't pay for expensive buckets of minutes like you do right now. You just make the calls. Basically, you don't even have a phone number. You just call up someone's username like you do on Skype. So that's certainly an issue. And I think if to use the iPad example, AT&T is trying to sell data plans for the iPad. If Wi-Fi was completely ubiquitous and you didn't have to worry about being outside of the coverage of wireless broadband, you would never need to sign up for a plan like that.
Victor in Ringwood in New Jersey. Victor, you're on WNYC. I was just up in your area the other day up near the New York border, near Greenwood Lake and all that, right?
Yes, that's correct.
That is such a great area up there. And tell us your thought on this.
Well, basically, I see an analogy here between the internet and public libraries. As a kid, I was in the public library constantly. I mean, never mind low cost. If you had to pay to get access to libraries, I wouldn't have been in there. We didn't have that much money, and that library eventually put me in the Ivy League because I had access to the information. The Internet's the same thing now. You know, I mean, a poor kid in a bad school has access to more information around the world than you could even 20 years ago we could possibly imagine.
So are you ready to pay
the Internet?
Are you ready to pay a little more in taxes to have government-funded or subsidized universal Wi-Fi?
Totally, but you got to realize that I'm prepared to pay more in taxes to get a lot of things universal, like healthcare.
Well, I think
so
one of
I'm not a guy you can say. I know I live in northern New Jersey.
Maybe
but
not
I'm
a
not
be-
one of these lower my taxes no matter what people.
Maybe not a bellwether for Middle America in Ringwood.
So I think one of the issues, though, is that electricity is or libraries are a little different than the Internet because there isn't just sort of one class of Internet access or broadband. I mean, Google's trying to introduce a 1 gigabit per second test program where Internet access will be something like 50 to 100 times faster than it is for most people who even have broadband right now. So I think the concern is that if you have a government-run program, it's going to be sort of a lowest common denominator experience, and it'll be a relatively slow broadband experience compared with what you can get at the sort of the top of the market right now. And so you don't want to have a situation where your connection is too slow to be able to do high-def video conferencing and all the things that are coming up in the next wave of innovation.
And, Victor, thank you for your call. I want to get to this other piece of it before we run out of time, because you were telling one of my producers off air about a play that Facebook is making to buy out a series of what are called locator apps, like Foursquare. Foursquare, Gowalla is another one. How do they work? Who uses them? Why do people want to be to have their locations known when they're on the Internet?
So there's two different kinds of these location-based services. One, like Google Latitude or Looped, it's basically always on. You're always broadcasting where your appearance is. It's using the GPS or cell phone triangulation technology in your mobile phone. Then there are others like Foursquare and Gowalla, and there are a handful of others out there, where it's a check-in model. You don't let people know where you are except when you voluntarily sort of check into the application and say, I'm here at WNYC today, for example. And so these are the sort of the two models. And what Facebook is planning to introduce next month, at least as far as we know, they've been a little cagey about the specifics, is the ability to sort of check in your location and broadcast that to your friends' network via Facebook. And so it's about adding location as another dimension to your social experience.
Now, a couple of comments via our Facebook page. Keith says, says free Wi-Fi, even more people I have to avoid on the sidewalk or the roads who are looking down at their electronic devices. Ha, ha, ha.
It's not going to go away.
And a question from Melissa on Facebook, would free public Internet have similar censorship laws similar to that of radio and TV? And are we okay with that if this was government provided?
So that is one of the caveats here, is that if the government is going to be sort of laying down some basic rules for service providers here, say we'll give you the spectrum, but you have to adhere to these standards. One of those standards that conceivably would be that it would have to be family friendly, that you couldn't access pornography sites, you maybe couldn't access sites where people are hosting illegal downloads of movies and music and things like that. We don't know what specifically might be covered there, but you would essentially have, like a government standard.
How could the government even do that technologically? Like, let's say they wanted to put up a giant router, near the sheep meadow of Central Park, and people are laying out there in the summer with their laptops and they can access the Internet, and somehow there's going to be a filter for thousands of websites that are deemed not family friendly?
Well, China does the same thing right now. I mean, they have the great firewall of China, so to speak, where China basically employs hundreds, maybe even thousands of people to basically filter and blacklist sites on the Internet.
And so to get a little conspiracy theorist on the locator apps, Foursquare, say, seems like a harmless, fun application right now. But if it gets large enough and ubiquitous enough, what's to keep employers from mandating that employees use it to keep track of their movements, for example?
Well, and companies actually do some of that right now. I mean, they put GPS locators in trucks and cars, and so they can know exactly where their employees are. And people have lost their jobs because they haven't been where they've said they were. And certainly, I mean, it's happening with Facebook already, even if you don't necessarily have someone tracking your locations. People have lost their jobs because they've said they've called in sick and then posted party photos or them at the beach later
dumb.
In the day.
That's just dumb.
Yeah, it's not very smart, but people. I mean, the great thing about the internet, I always say, is it's an amazing tool for people to expose how stupid they are.
Peter Rojas, founder of GDGT.com, think gadget without the vowels, also founded Gizmodo. Coming on with us every Thursday this month to talk about our digital lives. Do we know our topic for next week already?
I have some ideas. I have a good one, I think.
Okay. Well, we'll connect digitally or maybe face-to-face and figure them out. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.